Hello, this is Oni Boldak with Summit Sotheby's International Real Estate, and you're listening to the Real Talk Podcast.
And we are back with another episode of the Real Talk Podcast. Thanks for our loyal listeners. Today, I'm in a very special place, Park City, Utah, a little bit away from our home or headquarters in New York City. I'm here with Oni Boldak, a true mountain native from a family of real estate professionals, born and raised in arguably one of the best areas in the United States, in my opinion, Vail, Colorado. Oni attended the University of Colorado, then jumped into the construction business in the Vail Valley. He then went into the development side of the real estate business and eventually created Bold Real Estate Solutions, where he represented his clients in the Vail Valley region. Oni moved his family to Park City in 2017 to represent several impressive new development projects around the base of Canyons Village in Park City, which includes the Pendry Condominiums, Apex Park City, and two new development townhouse communities called Juniper Landing and Viridian Townhomes. Since then, Oni is working on his next and current big project, the Wahali, a mountain community located between Park City and Snow Basin right off Interstate 80. The resort is 25 to 30 minutes from the main street of Park City and about 45 minutes from Salt Lake City Airport, which we'll talk about in depth today. Please follow Oni on Instagram at obfactor and, of course, the Wahali development project coming up at Wahali Park City, as well as websites, which I'll plug into the show notes. So, Oni, welcome.
I appreciate it, Talk. Thanks for having me today. Really excited. My first podcast, I might ask. So I got to get rid of the butterflies and work this all out, but I'm excited.
Right off the bat, you've been on HGTV.
I have.
Which we talked about.
Yep.
So I want the listeners to get to know who you are. I'm going to give you a couple phrases. So please respond to those phrases with the first thought or word that comes to your mind. The first word is Park City or Canyons Village?
So our family has a tendency to go to Canyons Village. And right now, I think it just becomes a little bit more family friendly.
Park City real estate.
Bright future.
Salt Lake City.
The tech boom is rising and making Salt Lake a prominent location for business.
Real estate, property insurance.
A challenge in the mountains due to, of course, fire and other natural disasters facing us in the future, but something we'll work through.
Real estate, reality, television.
A joke. I've done it myself, and so it is programmed.
You are part of it.
And so I've done it myself, and I know the tricks of the trade. Unfortunately, there's some challenges, and I think it actually shows negative on our industry, but it is entertaining.
To your defense, the TV show you did is probably one of the better ones on the spectrum of from good to bad or great to bad.
At least like the industry itself is positive, and you know, highlight the home show and the actual seeing of beautiful homes. I think there's some positives there that I was a part of versus some of the other facade that's put on.
And they are commissions lawsuit.
The biggest change in the real estate industry in over 100 years, and that, of course, is even with things like Zillow and Trulia, it will trump that. I think that in the long term, it actually will benefit top producers and professionalize the industry more so than it is now. So I actually see it as a positive long term, but it'll be a bumpy road getting there.
TikTok, Instagram, and social media.
Social media, it's interesting in the dynamics that we have in the luxury real estate market. I believe that's a necessary evil, but I don't think it's a critical part to success of this high-end luxury real estate market because your buyers are not on it.
Call me.
Special, remarkable community located, of course, at between Canyons and Park City. Incredible privacy, incredible ski access, and obviously the detail that goes in each one of these homes are just absolutely incredible. Think ultimately ski in, ski out. There's less ski in, ski out than there is beachfront property. And I think that's something to be said about the Colony because it adds a lot of value there.
Real estate taxes.
We're very fortunate in Utah. It's about 1% real estate taxes. So we're low, for a lot of the East Coast. And a lot of people come here and see a value, and in California included. So for us, we're in a fortunate spot where we're perceived as value. But ultimately, it adds so much vitality to the community and is a necessary evil.
Park City zoning laws.
There's so many little idiosyncrasies within Park City greater community. So Park City zoning related to Park City within 84060, so Old Town, Main Street, is a serious challenge. But I think it adds value in keeping the character and the charisma of Old Town versus if we didn't have those limitations, what would the future be? And I think we need to keep that history to Main Street, while as you go further out on away from Main Street, it adds a lot of opportunity to create your own individuality.
Affordable housing in Park City for locals.
obviously, this I just recently read a book about growing up in, you know, what is this ski town history. Obviously, the ski bum, I think, is unfortunately a dying breed. And what that's turned into is a lot of J-1 visas. They bring a lot of character and culture to the community as well. But unfortunately, they're here for such a short period of time. As a result, that's the only way that the ski industry can fill those positions. But as a result, we're not seeing the character and the longtime locals be able to survive. I think it's a serious issue because actually having a family and raising a family and keeping that as part of your heritage is a serious challenge. So I think the idea of a ski bum and the goal of living in a resort community is become more and more challenging.
First time home buyers, Park City.
Obviously, the down payments, interest rates where they are now today, and the requirements set out on these first time home buyers. That said, it is really important that both the city as well as Summit County here in Park City, we have different programs as well as different communities that are offering deed-restricted housing, and so that becomes something that's a potential for them to be able to make a first-time hit. The difference, of course, when you enter into a deed-restricted housing, because you're capped on appreciation, it's hard to get out of. So it's another level of interesting challenges that come with that.
Airbnbs.
So Airbnb has become a real challenge related to making Park City home because the rental is increasing. At the same time, it's also increased the real estate industry because people are able to afford something with an intrinsic value of personal use. I am a personal fan of it. It opens up a lot of doors for potential buyers.
We're going to go over the NAR question separately a little later, but I find it interesting that, for example, let's talk about your answer for real estate reality television. It kind of shows a bad light into what we actually do on a day-to-day basis. Do you think maybe there's a correlation there with the NAR lawsuit that came up? Maybe they're seeing that agents are making too much money. They're selling $40 million home in the colony.
Sure.
And all they did was open a door and cause some drama.
No, I totally agree that the reality TV has exposed the industry as a negative. Now, what I find unique from that perspective and the challenge I have is the integrity of the lawyers who may have done this. You know what I mean? Like they saw a way to disrupt an industry and make a lot of money on it. I do have a hard time thinking that the potential claims that were made, people didn't understand how the industry works. And I have a hard time believing that just because I believe it's a known industry and how the industry should work. That said, as I mentioned prior, I actually do believe that this is a positive for the industry as a whole and the professionals that commit their career to this. It will take out those individuals that maybe just got to, you know, do one or two, three deals a year and push that professionalism to the people who are committing their entire career to this industry. Having the wherewithal to have a serious conversation with potential buyers, sit down with them and explain this is what I do and this is how I get paid, I think is going to bring a lot of positive light to the industry. And the requirements, of course, of having a buyer agency in the relationship and defining how that is and how they work, I think will be positive long term.
We have in New York City, the top 10% of the agents probably do about 90% of the business. Is it probably the same here?
100%.
Maybe even more skewed to maybe the top 1%.
Right.
Someone like you, you guys do 99% of the business.
Correct.
So by cutting out a lot of the agents, is it just more teams doing more volume that are at the top? And then the rest are essentially they're going to leave the business.
I think a lot of it, when you sit down with a potential buyer and you don't have that resume to prove that experience is there and being able to share that value with those buyers, they don't have that value to be able to sit down with those folks. They're going to have to find another way to make an income. That 90%, the couple thousand licensed realtors, for instance, in Park City, is going to dwindle down significantly. But that said, the transactions, you're going to get 1 or 2, 3, 4% maybe more transactions. But that's going to be diversified within that top 10% as an example.
Yeah.
The other piece that's unique about luxury markets, and I think this applies definitely to New York as well, luxury markets and or second home buyers. The primary residents that may be in a track home system, like understanding pricing in a track home when there's three sales on that same row of houses, not too hard. They know the idiosyncrasies of each market. Very different prospective buyer that says, tell me about the different boroughs. We're talking about a second home there. Can I rent there? Can I not rent there? What if I don't want to rent? Any idiosyncrasies? There's so many of them in New York, much like here. And if you don't, they're full-time, you need somebody to guide you.
Definitely.
And so I think that there is going to be markets where you're going to be, see very different effects of this lawsuit. I don't feel we're going to have as much of effect but I think it's a positive for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I think it's pretty reckless. I look at Colony. I've never driven by the roads there, but obviously just seen it from the slopes. You're about to buy a $10 to $20 million home in the Colony. If you're not going with a buyer's agent that knows what's going on in those markets, valuation-wise, zoning-wise, construction-wise, cost-wise, I think you're really going to be shooting yourself in the foot.
That prospective buyer is not 100% sold on the colony first. That may be where you end up. You really want to engage with somebody that knows the other options that are there. Deercrest, Bald Eagle, Empire Pass, Colony, all these other perspectives. And then ultimately you kind of say, well, wait, did you realize that maybe skiing is really important to you, but you also really love golf? There's these incredible golf communities that have assets on mountain, which case you actually get more so what your really goal is long term, and you may spend less money.
And the buyer's not going to know that.
They're not going to know that.
They just see Colony from their lifts.
And so having that dynamic to understand and guide them effectively is really important.
So I'm going to go into some other short form questions for you so the listeners can get to know you even more. So you're from Vail, Colorado. Where do you currently reside and what brought you to Park City?
Born and raised in Vail, and obviously a successful career in real estate as the chair of the Vail Board of Realtors in Vail. And ironically, when Park City sold to Vail Resorts, Vail Resorts tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, we're looking for a Vail story for the base parking lots right here in Park City, which arguably is one of the most valuable pieces of real estate in
Vail the Vail bought Park City in 2017?
So 16, okay. The year before that.
When the Epic Pass became national.
Became national, you yeah. Got it. And so, of course, the year before that, they had leased the canyon. So the Epic Pass was functioning on the canyons, and then obviously through a series of interesting dynamics, was able to buy Park City. During that transition, obviously, they acquired basically 10 acres, of which are the current parking lots, the base of Park City, and they wanted a Vail story and said, hey, can you put together a development plan? And so I spent the next 6 months putting together a development plan, including design, performas, presentation, presented that to the executive team in Vail, but unfortunately realized that I was banging my head against the wall. Fortunately, I moved on because they still remain as parking lot. But during that time, I fell in love with Park City talk. Yeah. And I looked at it from a perspective of access, like our world of having our phone in our hands, our world of now, travel being a key factor to that. I also looked at the older generation that's trying to draw their kids to their homes and how do we get them back to be with us. In the midst of their careers, it's hard to get to Vail, Aspen, Jackson Hole, Sun Valley, because you don't know if you're going to get there, let alone get back. And you can't do a long weekend if you're in New York and know that you're in the I-70 corridor is going to be a challenge. You can do that in Park City because you're 45 minutes from an international airport. And by the way, it's still under construction. It's a multi-billion-dollar infrastructure upgrade. And then it's basically 3 to 4 lanes up to Park City. You're there in 35 minutes. And so you got to have that dynamic of time to be able to morph and be able to make that work. The other piece I looked into is where on earth do you have now Vail Resorts, and then Deer Valley was purchased by Alterra, which of course is the Crown family from Aspen. So where on earth do you have the two most highly capitalized, efficient companies that are vying for our business?
Mm-hmm.
And so the constant battle of improving these, and they literally share a line with both passes. I don't recommend this because you are breaking the law by cutting the rope. You can ski from mountain up. Where can you do that and have that dynamic? So we made the move and couldn't be more excited about it.
What are some of the pointers that you tell younger families they're moving into Park City? Was it a hard transition school-wise for the kids, life-wise?
What's really unique, of course, is Park City has a wonderful school district. My oldest daughter is in a French immersion class, half her day is in French and half the day is in English. We are very fortunate to have a really great system. The other piece, though, is interesting is raising kids in a small community has its pros and cons. Pros, hey, it's a small community, safety, being able to be outside, close to the community.
Yeah.
Arts is real important to it. All become a critical part. But like, what do you do on that May day that's rainy and drizzly and nasty? Salt Lake is right there. You've got all these science centers and the museums and the kids' museums and the sporting events. And first couple weeks we're here, we went down to a really cool, trendy bar and club with some friends, and then went to a show at the Eccles Theater, which is a beautiful theater, and we're home by 9:30.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is happening? This is amazing.
Yeah.
And so being able to understand that you get to raise your kids in a smaller community, close-knit, that values education, that values safety, that values arts, that values culture, at the same time have that dynamic of the bigger city aspects is truly, truly unique, and we're really, really special to enjoy that.
If you could live in another city or state or town, where and why?
I'd probably start looking towards like a Driggs or a kind of McCall area. So
okay.
Driggs, be looking maybe for a little bit more space, maybe even a little bit smaller. Now, of course, I do that without kids, so when the kids are a little bit older.
Sure.
Because I really do love having access into Salt Lake, particularly with kids.
What's special about Driggs, though?
Driggs is just a little bit more wide open,
yeah.
Younger in its growth. So I'm big into mountain biking, and I'd probably throw that into the mix. My wife wouldn't agree, by the way, so we'd have to go somewhere warmer, Palm Desert, Scottsdale type of thing. So this is a one person.
Yeah, it's not the family.
Shout out to my wife. I know you wouldn't agree with that, and I love you.
I'm assuming, you know, skiing is a pretty big part of your life. As a broker, do you get a lot of days out here?
People kind of say, well, yeah, you get to control your own schedule. I'm like, no, my schedule is controlled by a couple thousand of people rather.
That's right.
Unfortunately not. I do not get as many days out on the hill as I'd like. I know I'm kind of in the midst of that career decision. I do invest that time when I have a chance to do that into my kids. We have a 10-year-old and twin 6-year-olds right now, and they just experienced our first really successful ski day a couple weeks ago. The kids are now skiing anything they want, and it was a beautiful day, and we didn't matter where we were in the trees or in the steeps. My wife and I looked at each other being like, this is why we do it. Being able to share skiing with the kids and know that you're investing in something that they're going to be able to share with their kids, a lifelong value, is something really, really special and unique. Otherwise, I invest a lot of time into doing some skiing in backcountry.
Your short form answers were more like deep dive answers, so I appreciate that. We already touched on NAR, and this is kind of a big thing because everyone's talking about it, and I have to do another episode on this eventually, but with the way the commission was created, do you think the seller's expectation are just going to be either, hey, we're looking at the title of the New York Times articles, and we know that we don't have to pay you guys anymore to get our deals done. Do you think it'll be a drastic change like that, or is it going to be more about informed sellers and buyers and actually know what the actual lawsuit is?
Here's what's really interesting. If you're a buyer, and of course the other industry that has to play catch up is our lending. The lender is not going to roll in a commission payment to the buyers, the BAC. Ultimately, the bank, as it's rolled into the appraisal. But all of a sudden, if you had a set number, that was $100,000, and a BAC is reduced now at being paid by the buyer rather than the seller, does that mean that $100,000 house is now less valuable? Because the market is built in that structure, that payment. How does that get evaluated within the industry? If you look at average pricing nationwide at $350,000, something like that, it's already built in. So we're then looking at the seller now just gain some more equity in their values, or is that then reduced so that you can then add into the BAC? So it's an interesting dynamic on how that's going to roll. And then knowing that a huge percentage of transactions, of course, nationwide, are all done with a lender, and that lender is not going to roll in that piece of it. So there's going to be a restructuring, maybe how that in, or a structure maybe as how that buyer pays that BAC. But ultimately, if you want to sell your house, I'm confident in that you're still going to want to attract and simplify it for that buyer, that you still offer a BAC. Although that transaction may be a little bit more, in so many people's perception, more open book, to me, the industry is always, it was understood in how that was transacted. Yes, there were some people that made some mistakes, and that's, of course, where this, you know, has all taken place. But I think over time, I really am confident in that the sellers, whoever really want to sell their homes, are going to want to attract every potential buyer to their property. And so as a result, though it would be up to the buyer and the seller as to how much that is, and it may range on what that buyer agent is doing for that particular buyer. I have buyers I've been working with for years that haven't transacted. Mm-hmm. And so that investment into them is massive. And then, of course, sometimes you get lucky with a quicker transaction. Somebody knows exactly what they're looking for, but you still have all the legalities that you work through. And so it will take some time to work this out, but there's other industries that are affected that hasn't been brought into the conversation yet. And that is the loan. How is that loan used? And of course, that is involved in so many more transactions. Fortunately, a little less so in Park City, where over 50% of our transactions are cash. So we're a little less affected by it than the rest of the market. I'm intrigued as to what's going to happen in the near future. But I think ultimately that long term will just be morphed into maybe a more open book version of what we're already doing.
Yeah. That $1 million to $2 million buyer, or even less, let's just say $500,000 to $2 million buyer, they're not going to be able to afford a buyer's agent's fee after their down payment in most cases. And of course, the bank brings the commissions. How are they going to make the money work? Well, ultimately, the money has to come from somewhere. And even if the buyer's agent, let's just say, takes some of a commission or less of a fee, it's still probably not enough to help out that buyer with their post-closing liquidity. And add to the fact, let's just say most homes, maybe in speed towns especially, they need work. New York City too, right? New York City co-ops were built in the 1920s. They need work. A lot of these apartments need work. So the impact also flows into the general contracting business. So that market gets affected. The $3 to $4 to $5 million buyer, maybe also they're just as careful with every penny that's going out. They're probably not going to be able to afford or want to pay a buyer agent. They might be even shooting themselves in the foot now because they're going to say, you know what? No more buyer's agents. I'm just going to go walk blindly into a listing agent at the Colony who does not care about me at all. They just want to close. And I think I know what I want. But then 5 years later, they just realize that the apartment or the house had issues that the buy-side agent could have obviously navigated them away from.
Right. Or didn't realize, like you said, is maybe this wasn't the right community from day one.
They didn't know that they had gone to Deer Valley or there was something comparable down the street. The way the industry was structured was not that bad. And the government is coming in and making it maybe even worse for the consumer. Do you think the government intervention is really good for the American public?
And there's such a dynamic between places like Park City and then Salt Lake suburbs. The conversation, I think, is going to come down to value add. And I think, unfortunately, there's going to be some people that are actually going to get hurt by this decision. So in other words, the industry, exactly what you're going for, is saying, hey, this is a bit good for the consumer. In the long run, we'll benefit the industry and benefit consumers because we're going to work out. And like I said, it's just going to be a more open book experience to what we're already doing. The bumpy road in getting there, I think, is going to have some people that are going to get hurt, both on emotionally, financially. I've closed a lot of buyer transactions just this year, and everybody is thankful and appreciative of what we do. Even last year, where you have another buyer that found an off-market property and were willing to bring me in to navigate through the different dynamics of what that town had some incident dynamics too. And so, like I said, people are going to get hurt, but I think ultimately it's going to stay the same with less people doing it in a more clear, open book, professional format. So I do think long-term we benefit.
Where are, in Park City, the struggles that you see on a day-to-day basis with sellers, developers, and buyers? And this is stepping away from the whole NAR commission scandal or the myth that's going on right now.
Right now, we're seeing a deification of basically product that is original, older, versus what's new. Buyers are looking through the windshield. Sellers are looking through the rearview mirror. The sellers are looking through the rearview mirror. They're seeing the past. They're seeing, well, hey, you know, it's going to cost me $10,000 to redo this kitchen. Reality is that kitchen costs $70,000 now. And so the construction industry, inflation, all those other aspects of the industry that not specific maybe to the sales part is bringing that dynamic back to life related to what's it going to actually cost to redo this property. And so if the seller's looking in the back and the buyers are looking forward, they see what the actual cost is. The sellers that have this house that says, well, my neighbor just sold it for five, but they did the remodel. It is what's 2 years old. Yeah, but it's done, right? So there's also some equity if you're going to go through that headache and to get through that, get that done. So long-winded is that what we're seeing right now is a days on market is increasing. Transactions are down. Our inventory, though, is about 25% of what it was from 2015 to 2020.
Yeah.
Obviously, from 500,000 to a million, there's just the inventory is so small.
Nothing.
And that, of course, is affected. People are, in essence, locked where they are and they can't get out because their interest rates are so low. And yes, they may have equity in the home, but to get that next jump is such a substantial jump and with higher interest rates. So we're seeing a market shift in that we have the newer product that is done and priced effectively is selling. And then you have this other product that's really sitting. And so when you look at the stats, days on market is way up or transactions are way down. But then when you start separating those two, saying this is already remodeled, it's done, and it's priced correctly for a remodeled home versus that home that is needs a bunch of work is priced looking at the neighbor that's already been redone. And the cost of construction has gone through the roof. That's been an interesting dynamic of people that are willing to put that time in, willing to make those repairs, willing to go that headache. And what is that equity that they need to take on that headache?
You just talked about construction costs because probably a very good time to be a general contractor in Park City. What are the typical costs and processes that buyers that you represent when you take them to, I keep saying the colony, but let's just say another single family house around this area that is built in probably the 70s. So what is the process that you take these buyers through and pricing out the remodel of a home?
I think that's one of the things I would say I bring to clients is I have that construction background. I built homes in Vail, so I can actually, you know, like know what's in that wall, what's actually going to take. But we have an interesting dynamic here in Park City where you have this really older product like in Main Street where it's, you know, even as early as the 1920s, the 1950s, where it's, you know, really dated. But ultimately what that means is you're getting a specific contractor that is literally putting this, because you have to keep the old structure. See, the original structure is protected. But you can raise it up, for instance, on stilts and then create a basement, for instance. And that's where financially you can actually make it work because you're adding square footage. But it's very expensive real estate to add because you have to literally protect the old 1940s frame. But then it's interesting is then Park City went through a little bit of a lull until the Olympics hit in 2002. and it really popped, right? So it put Park City on the map, and all of a sudden, you know, real estate started picking up again. The construction started picking up. So we have this gap where, for instance, the 70s and 80s, we don't have a lot of. But we have definitely the oak of the 2000s. And, you know, it's a little bit more of a skinning piece than, for instance, one of the things that I dealt with in Vail and Aspen is the skinny hallways or the skinny stairs and the architecture of the 70s and 80s. We don't have a lot of here. So we end up getting a little less of that outside of then the biggest problem in Main Street, Park City. So costs associated with that and then new construction differs dramatically if you're in Jeremy Ranch and Camas and Jordanelle as being some of the new areas versus what's, you know, what's happening right here in Park City. So construction, you know, that we're using this really between, you know, $850 to $1,000 a foot for new construction. And then remodel, of course, as you can imagine, really depends on if you're reskinning it or if you're moving walls and really opening up things and replacing windows and roofs, et cetera. So knowing those numbers, or at least a general idea to navigate, help your buyers navigate through that, and or sellers for that matter, educate them and saying, hey, you know, yes, your lot is worth is similar to what that $5 million house is, but that's going to take another $1.5 million to bring it up to that level. And so that equity has to be built in to this property to actually get it sold.
How receptive are sellers with that knowledge in mind, so a couple thousand dollars a square foot to completely get everything done? With that knowledge in mind, how receptive are sellers in negotiating the home prices of these 1960s, 1950s homes?
You know, I'm working with a great local family that has narrowed down into a specific community, specific requests, and we're working through, you know, some off-market options, and those sellers are just not willing to budge. They're sitting on a gold mine in their eyes, but of course, it's really what's going to take to actually get the work done to bring it up to today's standards, and they're not seeing eye to eye.
I see.
And so the market is really bifurcated, market that's new versus that's dated, and they're kind of sinking their own the same. Again, looking the back versus looking forward.
Yeah.
The bifurcation of the market is really interesting, and the struggle that's there. So I'm having a hard time with those sellers. Now, fortunately, by the time you have a seller that's actually on the market, time is money and value, and you want to work with people you know and trust, and they trust you. And if you're getting to a point where you're actively listing a property that is way off the valuation based on what needs to happen, then you didn't do your job. I had to walk away, and that's a tough thing to do.
Married.
But it's necessary evil to kind of keep everyone on the same page.
You had to walk away from a lot of projects, but you're walking into a brand new project. And this is very exciting. I saw the project layout here in the office, and talk to us about Wahali, the beginnings, including the family that owned the land.
So I'm really, really fortunate and passionate about this new community that is being built just beyond Park City. The property is the kind of best way to explain it. Is anything you want to do in the mountains of Utah, you can do in a controlled, exclusive environment at Wahali. So Wahali means eagle and Shoshone, so a little heritage to Utah. Obviously, there's some incredible book cliffs that span through this property, and the blank canvas to which we started here is just tremendous. And so we're starting with a picturesque, beautiful spot where we're going to include everything from cat skiing to biking, hiking, fishing, hunting, but then obviously add in world-class golf operations as well as food and wine. We have a sustainability story to it. So we're looking at environmental easement to 3,400 acres. We're over 5,000 in total. A solar farm, geothermal. We're using geothermal from that perspective to make this really, really, truly special. So we want to be a generational estate. And so we're investing into the future, the way that we want to be stewards of the land. So all these things speak to me, both including the environmental component, but ultimately the detail that's going into each one of these buildings and common amenities are actually sustainable cut timbers and or dead fallen timbers from Brazil. So like each amenity building is a piece of art and designed to be something truly special. You're excited to get your family and friends into this property. As you mentioned, the generational history behind it is investing into the generations of families to come and enjoy Wahali into the future. Dates back to before Utah was even a state, where Colville, which is the little town outside of Wahali, this family, the Boyden family, are some of the original settlers in Colville. And that family has basically acquired land over the generations, and that whole bunch of land, so that the 3,400 acre backcountry and a large parcel under what we call the Wahali Front, was all committed to the partnership. Well, of the current generation, six boys, Dave Boyden worked under or graduated a master's of landscape design from the U, so local. Grew up on this land, hunting, fishing, playing, running cattle, you know, all these other amazing things, enjoying the outdoors that his family is so passionate about, but graduated master's in landscape design and then basically spent the next two decades perfecting his craft of designing and building golf courses. His last course, the Diamante course, which he worked under Tom Fazio and Davis Love, and then ultimately met a gentleman by the name of John Kaiser, who is an art and craft of the construction side. He built 1,200 homes in Diamante, the Tiger Woods course, the Tiger Woods clubhouse, and Hard Rock Hotel. And so they created a keen relationship based on moral compass, work ethic, and desire to do something truly, truly unique. And of course, Dave, in the back of his mind, has been designing this golf course for decades.
In the back of his mind.
So now we get to execute, and I couldn't be more excited that we are get to open up this golf course this summer, 2024. Wahale is coming to life, and it is going to be truly, truly spectacular.
There's so much that I want to ask about Wahale, and I don't even know where to begin. But I guess first part is it's two separate, for listeners, make it easier to understand. It's a vast landscape of woods, canyons, mountains. The Wahale as a community consists of two separate plots of land, one being the quote-unquote backcountry, and then it's separated to another area, which is more of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a road, I guess there's a couple of roads that lead in between it, and there's a lot of nature right in between as well. So what you said earlier, no one is skiing behind someone's backyard to get to the town. You can ski from the mountain through someone's backyard.
Sure.
Same with Jackson Hole.
Yep.
Same with Beaver Creek. Same with, I guess, here. So maybe just give us the geographical background of both. And then I also saw on the website that it's almost 3,200 square acres.
So it's 50. Oh, yeah, correct. To the Wahale backcountry. Yeah.
And the canyon is about 4,000 skiable square acres.
Yep.
So not that much different from the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
If you're interested in the ski aspect of this community. So just tell us a little bit about the geographical layouts.
Well, I think what it correlates to is the focus is we're doing something truly unique in that we didn't take this beautiful parcel land and just throw up real estate everywhere. So not only are you skiing in somebody's backyard, but you're also hiking, you're biking in somebody's backyard. And what we're creating is something inspired by heritage of golf, a Scottish European village. The village itself, based around a European-style square, creates a sense of place, a sense of home, highly amenitized with both a cafe, your grab-and-go restaurant, imagine your fireworks or your 4th of July concert happening right there. But it's also a meeting place, right? The kids are riding their bikes, and that's a place for people to be able to gather and not just be alone in their one house in their second home. Like, you really get to know people. And so what that Wahale has done is create a 93% open space ratio by virtue of creating these villages. Now, we still have custom home sites. Those custom home sites actually average of just under three acres of land, so they're large home sites on top of that. But the virtue of Wahale is that everybody gets to enjoy that open space, not just the person who bought the ranchette within the larger community. Our goal is to create that generational adventure, at the same time sustainability, wellness, and health. The focusing on your answer, of course, or your question, is just that, is that we really want to create a sense of open space for all of us to use. And I think we've accomplished that with a 93% open space ratio.
The project on the residential side has, you guys give the buyers an option of building their own home.
Yep.
Home sites are average of 3 acres. It could be as large as six, small as an acre.
They go up to about 20 acres. Excuse me.
Oh, 20. Oh, wow. Yep. That's huge.
To about a half acre. But if you take everything over 10 acres out of that calculation, the average is still over 2.5 acres.
2.5, okay.
So you definitely still get a lot, you know, within that half acre to 6 acres.
Fairly sizable.
Yeah.
What should the buyer expect? We talked about construction costs.
Sure.
Now let's talk about new development construction costs.
Yep.
What should the buyer expect? And do you guys arrange that team, or do you have the buyer just kind of take it and do their own thing with their own?
That talk. So obviously the village product is something that Wahale will build. We have four different floor plans, ranging from 3,000 square feet to 7,000 square feet. That, of course, is a world-class interior design team where you still get to design the interior of your home, but the exteriors is managed and maintained by the homeowners association.
Okay.
That's the village product.
Yeah.
The estate lots are, you got it. Bring your own architect, bring your own builder. Though we do hit the easy buttons, we've got an incredible architecture team and interior design team, as well as, of course, a construction team that will build your home. You're not required to work with Wahale.
You know, we have buyers in the city that buy into these new development projects, and they will rip everything out and make it custom. And this is kind of, it caters to that group, right? They want everything custom. So chances are, it's a lot more work for you guys or for the developer team to make it all custom for them. It probably caters to their needs a lot better than what you could buy, what we call a New York City sponsor product.
Yep.
For a 6-acre lot, what's the buildable square footage? Are there zoning laws that are obviously probably being enforced by the city there, right?
There are city qualifications on the design and size, but we actually put another layer there within Wahali. So we want to have a natural aspect, natural look to Wahali. So for instance, we don't do stucco. We all natural timbers, siding, rock and metal, really what the exterior look to. So depending on the size of the lot, we'll also determine the minimum size as well as the maximum size of the house. So we have created, of course, you know, though you may have a 6-acre parcel, you have a specific building envelope to which you have to build in. What that does, of course, is it is the premier, make sure you maintain the premier view corridors specific to your lot, but it also protects your neighbors and or what their view corridor is as well. So one of the things, of course, when you look into some of the other communities within Park City, again, the environmental sustainability story is huge. Our minimum size on these estate lots is 3,000 square feet, which is small compared to the other golf communities or mountain golf communities. But we can't speak to being sustainable and having that conversation about being good to the earth by requiring you to build a 5,000 square foot home.
Yeah, obviously.
That said, the option is there.
For a project like this, how did you get to represent this type of project? And this question is probably centered towards more of the listeners that are more within the industry. Was it a pitch? How did you get to represent a beautiful project?
So obviously lucky to have the opportunity to present it. And obviously I take that very seriously in commitment to Wahali and principles and the team and the vision. The opportunity though presented based on the experience, right? So obviously having 2 decades of real estate experience, both in construction, property management, maintenance, obviously sales in the luxury community, growing up skiing, growing up mountain biking, everything that the Wahali speaks to, that vision is something that I can bring to the table firsthand. The other piece, of course, then comes into the experience of development. If you want to represent a developer, you got to start somewhere. So you got to start as an assistant. You got to start as a sales agent. So obviously you mentioned early on experience in Pendry and Apex and some of these other larger communities to be able to apply what I have acquired, their skill sets acquired there and apply that to operationally and to systematically execute on sales for Wahali and, you know, create what that vision is and what the highlight, of course, depends on what that buyer is looking for. Then it becomes down to the network. So I got very fortunate. A dear friend of mine was put in charge of basically developments for Summit Sotheby's International Realty. We have kids the same age and saw her ironically at a park. And I had just finished up my responsibilities to Pendry and said I was looking for my new project and her eyes went wide open and she said, wait a minute, you're available? And turned into an introduction to the principals and that turned into a 3-hour meeting. We came home from that meeting and told my wife, I said, Lindsay, these two guys, their work ethic, their moral compass, this vision for this property, if this property is half as beautiful as they made it sound, I just want to work with them. And so that goes a long way too, right? I have an incredible amount of respect for the work ethic, the vision, the hard work, their history to get to them to this point, to have that opportunity where we can coincide and see eye to eye to that commitment. So experience, focus, hard work, and then obviously you just got to be out there putting your name in the right places. And sometimes you get lucky. And I think I definitely attribute that to a little bit of luck. But of course, if I didn't have all the ones before that, wouldn't be here either.
It's 90% hard work, 10% luck. Right?
Totally.
The skiable terrain for the listeners, I think that's probably one of the biggest attractions for them. There's a private cat in Wahali. Mm-hmm. Is everything there is a cat access only? Will there be lifts? What's the lowdown there?
So lowdown, it is private to guests and owners, right? So that's a critical part. We do have 2 snow cats. We haven't named the other one yet, but we do have Wally. They would be basically private cat skiing in the backcountry. Now, what's really cool about Wahali, of course, is that if you want to learn how to skin and you want to learn about snow conditions and you want to learn more about backcountry beyond just saying, hey, I'm going to hop on a cat and tell me where to ski and I'm going to have a blast. Let's get some lunch. But Wahali in our adventure center will have the qualifications to educate and go out on a skinning trip. For instance, the cat will still take you to the backcountry, but then you're actually going to go out on a skinning trip on your own 2 feet. So the answer to your question is we are going to mold the experience to what that client and owner wants.
Yep. Sounds like a dream.
It is.
Tell us about pricing. Where does this start from and what can it go up to?
Home sites, the estate lots, start at $700,000 and work their way up to $2.3.
Okay.
With our first phase, we have 24 or 25 sold. Mm-hmm. We have 4 of the next 25 committed. And so of what's on the market now, between $700,000 and
$2.3.
Okay. All of the cottage residences, again, 3,000 to 7,000 square feet, we're starting at $2.25 and then working our way up to $6 plus million.
And what would you say would be the best value from the range of products that you guys have now? Where do you see the most value for buyers?
There's so many people that just want to hit the easy button and say, I want to spend 3 days with you, with the design team, and then call me in 14 months when my house is done.
Yeah.
Right? And I love this floor plan. I just want to
That's
make, you know,
critique. If I was right? A buyer.
Like that, yeah. The detail, especially for a second home.
Yeah.
And so the value play is really going to come down to what your goals are. Our job is to help direct you into what best fits you and your goals and that of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a loaded question. I think it really depends.
How many kids? How old are they?
Totally.
What do you want to do?
Right.
Are you retired? Or empty nest? Yeah, there's a lot. And final question, when's the best time to tour a product like this?
It's summer. Our biggest asset right now is delivering this summer with this the championship golf course. It's a 19-hole championship golf course. It is a piece of art. We mentioned, of course, the timbers from Brazil, everything from gold-flaked roofs, or ceilings, I should say, to Tesla solar roof. To see that right now, summer is the best. And once we go vertical and we have, obviously, a little more of the operations underway, we will be skiing at Wahali next year.
What's the best way to get appointment with you there?
Good news, WahaliUtah.com has all my contact information and more information on the special community. And then obviously BoldickMountainLuxury.com is also our team's website. Some Sotheby's International Realty, of course, also a player to that.
So we'll slide into your DMs too or not?
Yeah, an OB Factor as well as BML or Boldick Mountain Luxury on Instagram.
Yeah. Kent, thank you enough for your time here. Beautiful Park City. I really enjoyed this episode. I really enjoyed listening and learning about the landscape here, the markets, new development projects, the renovation costs and all that. Thank you so much for your time. And for all the listeners, please check out the show notes if you want to get in touch with Donnie. Thank you.
Appreciate the talk.